we were doing. Well, we were in the section, so we were just trying to follow the argument and also to highlight the to follow the argument and to highlight, you know, what's singular about it and also what's curious about it. In some cases, you know, to try to understand it better, or just, you know, you could say differently. It's also important to know that. Mm-hmm. So we're in the section which was discussing how, and I thought very, very sharply, the inadequacy of intellectual quest, you know, in its own right, after having clearly spoken about it in an admiring fashion in terms of, you know, bringing quite a bit to the table, but its inadequacy, you know, in the longer term. Moreover, the idea that, you know, philosophy in general has its limitations, but even more than that, the idea that it ends in that every effort, you know, philosophically to adequately capture the Ribbono Shel Olam ends not only in frustration, but a very fascinating perspective, ends in a kind of, you know, heresy. And that in some respects, the effort to be, you know, to straddle, I guess, or to, you know, in a sophisticated fashion to formulate the, you know, the nuances of a divine being with all the difficulty that entails, that kind of saps people's, it frustrates them, and it also, you know, leaves them particularly spiritually, you know, weary or unsatisfied. And that some of the formulations, while, you know, having like a short shelf life of satisfaction, I guess, you know, end up, you know, also being, you know, a catalyst for heresy. They talked about you know, Spinoza and, you know, pantheism, you know, and so on and so forth. So then after that, we turn to the you know, to the next point, which is the idea that, also very fascinating, that it could have been different. And again, this I think is mechudash, meaning it's not intrinsically the case that man can't find Ribbono Shel Olam in nature, or nature in, through intellectual pursuit alone, but that that itself is a consequence of chet. Again, I'm not sure what prompted that. Again, you know, obviously parshanut and the role of chet and tshuva, and so on, but it's a very interesting, the consequence is a very interesting perspective, which says that notwithstanding, you know, the inadequacy of all these things which we've described so sharply, you know, it you know, it could have been different, like the narrative of human history and human capacity and you know, the capacity to find the Ribbono Shel Olam, all this, you know, could have been different. And I think that that taps into like some very classical themes. And one, the idea of chet as a mechitza mafsika bein, you know, Adam and the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is a very, very like core principle in halacha and in tshuva, you know, etc., and hashkafa. I think that is like a critical thing. But in addition to that, this idea that there are events that took place in our history, you know, starting, of course, from the Chet HaKadmon of Adam HaRishon. But I think, you know, this is a phenomenon that we are familiar with, that different Mefarshim have, you know, different perspectives on, in terms of the other, you know, calamitous Chatayim, right? Whether it's Mechiras Yosef, you know, or the Chet HaMeraglim, Egel HaZahav, which is, you know, coming up. All of these, you know, terrible events really kind of changed the trajectory of Klal Yisrael's history, but not just its history, but I think its spiritual capacity. That's just in general like a fascinating question in Chazal. There definitely is a school that thinks that, starting from, again, Chet Kadmon with the Rambam and Ramban, all the others are trying to explain what was. But again, you know, the, you know, Luchos Rishonos, Luchos Shnios, Chet Egel, Imale Luchot Yisrael. So again, some of it is more, you know, more logical and just more you know, like how many Svarim would you have needed in Tanakh, you know, Gemara Nedarim, and, you know, again, the relationship between Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat Peh. But as you kind of escalate, there's this sense, you know, that the Bechiel Adoros of these transgressions, you know, really not only changed our history in a very significant way, how early we would have come to Eretz Yisrael, how, but like kind of what the Rav is, you know, drawing upon here, and that is the idea that it changed the nature of man, or the nature of the quest, you know, to develop a bond with the Ravon Shel Olam. So again, to me, it's still a little interesting or puzzling, because one would have thought that in the end of the day, you know, the sense of the world of halacha is, you know, a priori, especially in the Rav's thinking, you know, Staka Baraisa Bara Alma, which is a, you know, a Kabbalistic and a Midrashic statement, obviously goes way back and is very influential and is quoted by a lot of people. But the Rav's twist on it, you know, is particularly powerful, you know, as we discussed earlier in the year, and that's this idea of, you know, halacha representing a kind of a, you know, an ontological, like, blueprint for the world that we approximate, you know, in a practical way, you know, in our real lives, but that it's all about, you know, the pristine, you know, blueprint itself. That gets us a different understanding of what that means. So one would have thought that that would always be, you know, a necessary component in trying to accomplish the impossible, you know, that is also, as I like to say, the indispensable, namely developing this kesher, you know, that we shouldn't be able to do, but, you know, Ratzah Kodesh Baruch Hu L'Zakas Es Yisrael, that we are able to do. So the idea that, you know, why is man unable to find his creator, you know, the cause of frustration is sin which separates him from his creator, that all well and good, and that's very traditional, and I like it. And but the idea that that chait change the way that we look at eternity and infinity, the fixed husk of mechanistic consciousness covering the inwardness of living world that sings songs of praise to the Creator, covering the soul and the inner core of creation, or that we certainly believe that at some time in the future, when tears are wiped from the exhausted faces and evil is eradicated forever, the throne of God's honor will become firmly established in the lower world, all creatures will know it was God who created them. At the present time, however, God is high. This idea, to me, is a little bit, you know, surprising, but still very interesting. Okay, so that's really what I was, I think, what we left off with. And again, it's not so much an onesh. I think that's also an important thing to emphasize. Whenever you encounter these themes, you know, about a change in trajectory or like, you know, a reconfiguration of man's nature or some other spiritual reality, you know, I think often like a more powerful way to explain all this, I think that's what the Rav's getting at here also, probably, is the it's cause and effect, you know, more than it is skar v'onesh, or it's a cause and effect skar v'onesh, maybe the better way to say it. Meaning that like there were certain opportunities, and you know, having, you know, kind of not capitalized, or worse, you know, having kind of corrupted those, you know, opportunities, you know, the fallout, not just the onesh, you know, but the relationships, you know, became scarred, or certain associations, you know, the way that we look at the natural world, you know, is kind of forever blighted by Klal Yisrael, you know, saying Eila Lokecha Yisrael and dancing around, you know, a golden calf. It takes more than just, you know, saying Salachti Kidvarecha, that's kind of what I'm saying, you know, to get past. You could say Salachti Kidvarecha, but you still kind of corrupted, you know, you can't get the potential for corruption, you know, is always there because it happened, and it just willy-nilly, this is how I understand it anyway, it kind of just changed the reality. That's, for example, how I understand, you know, the Bechiel Adoros of Mechiras Yosef. Like, I'm very into the idea of Rabbeinu Bechai, who says the end of, where did he say this? At the end of Vayechi, or at the end of I think it's in the Nevi'ah here, Nevi'ah Yigash. He talks about, you know, Yosef and his brother. He's the only one who says explicitly in the Rishonim, I'm aware of, that, you know, Yosef never completely forgave his brothers. So, like, people are very shocked by that. So, I thought it was, like, an amazing idea. And I thought the idea was that there are aspects of the chait of the brothers to Yosef, Mechiras Yosef, that weren't subject to Mechila. I think there are a bunch of explanations about it. Not our topic now. But the one I'm trying to highlight as an example of this, meaning the Achzorius that was expressed and that became kind of temporarily legitimate, let's say in the name of Rode for whatever justification, like the Sfarno was given. But the ability of brothers to, you know, just the fact that that brothers were able to turn on another brother and sell him in that way, that kind of forever opened up widened, you know, the capacity for cruelty in the world. Like, it was a level of Oxarius, even with all the justifications, that, like, it was like the taboo of, you know, what it means, you know, to be a family member and the loyalty that includes, or the red lines that can never be crossed, you know, that was all shattered. So again, let's say in the end, the brothers found out, they understood, they were, you know, they were, let's say, contrite with absolute sincerity. But in the end of the day, they still shattered an ideal in the world that either isn't so hard to put back together, or maybe it's impossible to put back, you know, together because it happened. Like people said, you know, about the, like, you know, presidential assassinations. You know, I remember, the first time that I experienced it, and like there was a certain like loss of, or 9/11, you know, and for you, I guess, you know, a little later. Like, there's a certain loss of innocence, you know. Like, would anybody, or terror attacks in Israel, you know, that unfortunately become commonplace, or this Pittsburgh thing, you know, for American public or non-from American Jews who don't identify so much for Israel, so for them it's like wake-up call. But more than that, like, for many of them, like, if you hear them speak, it's like, you know, it was like a transformative, not a sad, for us it always was a sad moment, a tragic moment, a scary indictment of, you know, the state of anti-Semitism culture. But for some people it's more than that. It was like a moment, a changing moment, a transformative moment, like a death of innocence. I didn't think this could happen here, like a shattering of illusions. So in a way, you know, both in terms of the structural, you know, divine interrelationships, and especially in terms of, you know, the shattered ideals that are so important. Like, you can achieve these great things, but not if there's a corruption of the categories. You know, that's how I understand it. This has nothing to do with, I'm explaining it because the Rav says it here, whatever, it's a much bigger idea and topic. But so that's what I think about Mechiras Yosef, that's what I think about Egel, that's what I think about, you know, the Meraglim. You know, it's the loss in some cases it's the loss of a moment of opportunity, like a called Odi Dofek, you know. And in other cases, and that itself, like, though, well, this is like a moment which could have catapulted, and, you know, that was sadly, you know, opportunity that was lost. But in some cases it's more than that. It's, you know, it's the ability then to overcome, possibilities or, you know,
it's like
realities or associations. What's that?
Like Ambacho Osachas.
Yeah. Like Ambacho
Osachas. Until that point, it just wasn't relevant to jump
right.
in
right.
suddenly.
Excellent. Very good. Exactly that kind of a thing. So I think that's, you know, but the idea that this in the future, you know, is something that can, in a natural way, be, you know, again, the halacha part of it, I think, is surprising a little bit, but the basic idea, I think, is very fascinating. Okay, take a little song. So then comes the next part, which is once you've established the inadequacy and you have this extra little chapter also about, as we say, you know, it didn't have to be that way, it doesn't have to always be that way, which is what we were just talking about. So then comes the, what is the, I guess, the Kasav HaShlishi Machri, where do you go next? Because we already had this, you know, we went through this process of, you know, which paid, you know, temporarily in dividends, and as we'll see, for the long term also, it was an important step. But now it's established that it's inadequate. So what comes next? So the answer is that the Creator seeks, this is a chat, we're on chapter 4, right? And what you added was chapter 5, good, yeah. Okay, so the added is the Creator seeks the creature, the spiritual personality. He knocks at the opening of the tent, whispers a lover's passion, let me and my sister, my darling, my faultless dove. As described above, man's search for God expresses itself in intellectual activity, right? But the ultimate boundary of reality, leads him to retreat, right? So when they confront eternity, many of them are confused, frightened, uprooted, their faith, right? Only a few remain steadfast in the face of mystery, right? This is the crisis point. Here, God reveals himself from above nature. So this whole piece is, right, basically to suggest that that after man is kind of exhausted, even though, again, he's made some constructive step, but now he's in a state of, temporarily at least, he's kind of more frustrated than when he began. So then it's the yozma, it's the kind of the initiative of the Rabboni Shalom to reach out to man. And the reaching out, this is not an intellectual relationship at all. It's a prophetic one. The difference between Limud HaTorah and Nevuah, as is often pointed out, is the direction. Right? This is from the Rabboni Shalom to man. I'm not going to get into the question at the moment, how a prophet, how a Navi becomes qualified as a Navi. The Rambam's view, certainly, is that it takes a lot of personal preparation. There's even a debate in the Rambam commentaries about Nevuchim, whether basically, a person who prepares for prophecy is always going to succeed unless, it's withheld from him, kind of artificially, by the Rabboni Shalom, or, as much as preparation as he does, it still requires the initiative of the Rabboni Shalom. Kind of like a bit of a, I guess, a Telzer, a Chakira, the Farshe Amar Nevuchim. But it's important. It's an important question, meaning, again, many of the great, Hogei Deot were the opinion that Nevuah always is initiated, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But for the Rambam, who thinks that there is intellectual and religious preparation, right, Hakol Modim, that, it can be withheld, the question is, it can be withheld or, it's never automatic. And I think it's an important... But Alpha became... He's not talking about the Rambam here, but what he's saying certainly applies even for the Rambam. And that is, in the end of the day, the Vua requires... may require preparation, but it's not primarily... It may use intellectual mechanisms, according to the Rambam, not others. But in the end, it's still... Hitgalu, it's still Gilui Shechina. It's a divine revelation. But what's fascinating, again, and what is this Nevuah? Basically, as we saw in the beginning when we were reading Lamafreya, the end, right? Nevuah, in the Rav's treatment in Bikashna Misham, is in many cases interchangeable with Maimed Har Sinai and Matan Torah, and then from there, Mesorah. Again, that's a pattern which begins right here, and then of course it reaches its crescendo in the end, which we already read. So God reveals himself to his creation above and beyond nature, bring prophecies to human beings. This is the new Torah that was given at Sinai, and here's an interesting twist. The next little sections accentuate the idea of the Torah being given in the Midbar, or the Torah being given in a state where people are in despair. That's not in a state of simcha, and certainly not a state of calm, but where the turbulence and frustration, and even the yeush, the despair, even the sadness and the fear, are like a precondition for Gilui Shechina. Now that is a very... Now again, there are a lot of makoros for that, both in Tanakh and in Chazal, you know, Mimamakim Krasicha Hashem. But it's interesting how much he emphasizes that, you know, in this particular context. And I think that the reason for it, aside from being, I think that the Rav felt that, you know, the assumption in religious phenomenology is that, you know, religion is this calming, soothing thing. I think I've mentioned already that in, you know, footnotes to Lonely Man of Faith, I think it's Lonely Man, in the beginning he has this thing about, you know, everybody thinks religion is this, you know, balm, B-A-L-M, you know, and it soothes, you know, what ails you, and it's all tranquil and calm, and, you know, that the opposite is true, right? It's all about, you know, struggle, and highs and lows, peaks and valleys, you know, and dialectical tension, you know, et cetera. So I think, number one, that he felt, you know, again, from that point of view, that, like, in discussions of theology and religion, et cetera, like, everybody's way, and I think it's, in our time, it's certainly even much worse, right? Basically, religion is now just behaviorism. I think we've discussed that. But it's, so I think this is a very much, although it's true, of course, you know, but there's always, what troubles me is there's a balance, obviously. You know, Kishem Shemvarchen Allah Tov Mevarchen Allah Ra, which he himself quotes in a couple of sub-chapters. If you'd read, like, the next few sections, you get the impression that it's all only in a state of, you know, crisis and chaos. But, you know, the Kach Mevarchen Allah Ra comes after Kishem Shemvarchen Allah Tov. And Nevuah, which he's talking about here, according to the Gemara and Shabbos, you know, never operates in a state of etzev or kas. You know, it's only bitoch simcha. You know, and obviously, you know, it's you know, it's the idea of simcha and yira are two, you know, equal elements. You know, and we'll see that going forward also. But the emphasis here is very much on the other side. I think it's as a corrective. Again, we, you know, the Rambam has this beautiful formulation at the end of Hilchos Lulav, you know, where he talks about Simcha Shel Mitzvah. So that part of it is kind of very much toned down here. You would read this alone, you'd think a Gilui Shechina, maybe that's a precondition for the actual Gilui, is only in the state of Tzara, you know, and Bechi. And that's certainly not the full picture, but that's what he's emphasizing here, and I believe it's because he thinks that that's a corrective. So he was given at Sinai to slaves who had become free. So I think there are two reasons. Number one is that what I just said, the corrective. And I think that the other thing is, as we'll soon see, this also becomes an opportunity to project the idea of Ritzon Hashem. And in two senses. Number one, the Klal Yisrael are mitzuvim, that it's batel. Again, my citing of the Mishnah and Avos, but I think the idea is clear. The batel ritzon chal ritzon no, that real religion is a surrender, and it's a total identification. You know, it's not this, again, kind of, you know, free-spirited, you know, there is bechira in the world, but bechira, it's not bechira in the context of religion, the bechira in your, you know, bachar to bachayim, but, you know, there are some areas where there's bechira. So I think there's that, and he also philosophically, the idea of Ratzon Hashem, in addition to the idea that Klal Yisrael are avadim, and they're subordinate, but in addition to that, this idea of the role of Ratzon Hashem in the creation and in general meaning of life. Chazal have different views, and, you know, throughout, you know, Jewish history, Jewish thinkers have talked about this. You know, why did the Ribbono Shel Olam create the world? Mishum, you know, Tavaso, Mishum Chazdo, Mishum Ritzono. It's like the Rav, in, I believe, in Ish Halacha, you know, is very emphatic, quotes in the name of Reb Chaim, that Reb Chaim was, like, very emphatic, that it's, you know, they all these other things are wrong. It's Mishum Ritzono. So this idea of, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam, again, I think it's almost like an analog. This is, again, my speculation to, like, the idea of inner logic. In other words, you know, God's not here to facilitate, you know, of course it is, it's a chesed for man, but Chalila, you shouldn't, it's a theological problem, you know, for you to be implying, you know, that there's something outside of his own inner logic or the force of the will itself, you know, that's like imposed on his will. Like, even chesed and tov, you know, are kind of like a challenge to Ritzon Hashem. No, it's pure Ritzon Hashem. That's why I think the world of Brits, we'll talk about this next time, is like very wary of Tamei Mitzvos. Right? Because this aspect of Ritzon Hashem is like critical. So I think part of this, you know, Ritzon Hashem theme is like Klal Yisrael doesn't deserve it now. You know, it's not Ravona Sholem responding to their, you know, whatever. It's like totally unexpected. It's Ritzon Hashem. I think that's really what's going on. So God reveals himself, stopping one more second, beyond nature, bringing prophecies to human beings. This is the new Torah that was given to slaves who had become free, and who then, you'll see this whole next section is like very, very emphasizing this, reveals himself to man in the desert, right, in the Midbar, a wasteland in the shadow of death, right? At a time when it seems as if man has ceased searching for God in a desolate wasteland, given up on everything, God reveals himself to me as an act of Ratzon. Right? This revelation is not a reply to man's questions and doubts, visions and longings. God arrives suddenly. The deity encounters a flesh and blood individuals, satisfied with the manifest and the superficial. The exposure of the hidden one to a world of chaos, because that is his will. This is what I'm getting at. This is the revelation of the Shekhinah. God revealed himself to Adam when he had sunk into the deep mire of the original sin that separated him from his creator and was not expecting a revelation of the Shekhinah. Right? In other words, it isn't, you know, like there's a trajectory and it's a response. You know, it's Ritzon Hashem. And Klal Yisrael are the recipients of it. Their mitzuvim, right, their joy or their happiness is a consequence, maybe, but it's not the goal, and it's certainly not the precondition. The Israelites leave Egypt as slaves, captivated by the flesh pots. They sin with the golden calf, betray the husband of their youth, the Holy One. Blessed be he, comes in a cloud, right, and stands with Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, you got the basic idea. A time of historical and metaphysical desolation. This is Judaism's view. God reveals himself to man when he's in the grip of a fate cruel as vultures. A lofty existence breaks forth and rises from ontological negation, planting in the wake of uprooting. Right? The general theologian's approach, by contrast, is strewn with roses and adorned with grace. This is why I'm suspecting that this is, right? It finds what it wants in the image of Logos and in the figure of Nous in pure form, ideas gloriously displayed in the inherent harmony of the world's regulation. From lawful, the regulated, the good, the beautiful, the general theologian ascends to the absolute, the perfect, and the one. But philosophical theology is perplexed and confused when it encounters impermanence, disorder, evil, negativity, privation, formlessness. Therefore, the later Greek philosophers concluded that matter is the source of evil and chaos, and they believed, heaven forbid, that matter is outside God's domain. Authentic Jewish thought, rooted in faith in the absolute creatio ex nihilo, yesh me'ayin, introduced a mutual relationship between God and matter, basically, what he's saying, and man. Okay, we'll pick up with this, I guess, next time. But I think these are the impulses, A, to shatter this illusion of religion as this, you know, happy, peppy, you know, kind of... again, you can get too carried away with it, the simcha part, or the, you know, ava part is clearly, you know, 50% of... But I think what his point is trying to show, this idea of that, number two, avdus, mitzuveh, and three, this idea of Ritzon Hashem as being kind of the foundation of the halachic world. So we'll...
In terms of the brisker Ritzon,